Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. It's time to improve your American English while you learn about our world as it is. Today, we will ask the experts. Russian leader Vladimir Putin has taken over Crimea. Why did he do it? Then, is it just my imagination, or is the weather getting warmer? And I do not mean just because it's springtime in the Northern Hemisphere. What is going on with this crazy weather? We'll have some answers. This is VOA, and we are happy you have joined us. Russia has taken complete control of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. Now, observers are debating what led Russian President Vladimir Putin to make such a move. Western nations have called Russia's occupation of Crimea illegal. Robert Legvold is a professor at Columbia University in New York City. He says the occupation shows President Putin wants to be remembered by future generations of Russians.
From his point of view, it would be a far more substantial legacy than the Sochi Olympics, which everybody's been talking about as something that he wanted to be his legacy. But to have brought Crimea back into the historical place that it has had in the fold of Mother Russia, I think he sees as probably the single most important thing that he will accomplish as president.
Professor Legvold says Mr. Putin believes he is correcting what he sees as the historical injustice of 1954. That was when then-Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev gave control of Crimea to Ukraine, which was then a Soviet republic. Matthew Rodzianski is an expert on relations between the former Soviet republics and the United States. He works at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington. He says that by seizing Crimea, Mr. Putin has destroyed the image of Russia being a responsible partner on international issues.
But there's another image that he may care much, much more about, and that's his image at home as not only defender of the Russian people, which certainly the argument about defending Russians in Crimea and eastern Ukraine would help, but also as defender of a greater Russia, you know, of a vision of Russia which is more powerful and bigger and which is taken seriously perhaps more out of fear than out of love.
Brent Scowcroft served as national security advisor to two American presidents. He told VOA before Russia's seizure of Crimea that President Putin wants his country to be seen as a strong power.
Putin nurses a grudge because what he says is at the end of the Cold War, when Russia was flat on its back, we walked all over them, and we did it because they were weak. Technically, he has a point. We pushed the borders of NATO right up into the former Soviet Union. We denounced the ABM Treaty and so on and so forth. We didn't do it to weaken the Russians. We did it because we thought it was useful. But that gnaws at him.
The United States and its Western allies have ordered economic actions against Russian officials because of what happened in Crimea. The Russian government answered the orders by placing travel restrictions on U.S. officials. Professor Legvold says the crisis over Crimea could affect American cooperation with Russia in such areas as Iran and the Syrian conflict.
In Syria, they've been a problem all along the way. They helped in an important way on chemical weapons, but the notion that somehow we can find common ground for achieving a political outcome grows more remote because, again, the Russians have no desire to seem like a cooperative partner when they are defining us not merely as misguided in our policy, but even malevolent in our policy, that is, beginning to think of us as an adversary, not simply a difficult interlocutor.
Professor Legvold and others are closely watching relations between Russia and the United States. They say if tensions rise over Ukraine and other issues, there could be a new Cold War. The World Meteorological Organization says 2013 was the sixth warmest year since officials began collecting temperature records. The United Nations agency says the new information confirms that temperatures on Earth's surface are rising. Last week, the agency released a report called The Status of the Climate. It shows many extreme weather events took place throughout the world last year. Christopher Cruz has been watching the thermometer rise.
The World Meteorological Organization says 13 of the 14 warmest years on record have happened in this century. And it says each of the past three decades has been warmer than the one before it. A decade is defined as a period of 10 years. The WMO says the 10-year period from 2001 to 2010 was the warmest decade ever measured. Michel Giraud is the Secretary General of the WMO. He told VOA the temperature records show our planet is getting warmer.
Since 2001, the first year of this new century, the coldest year that we have observed since 2001 is actually warmer than any year before 1998. So I don't think this can be used in seen in contradiction of the of a stop in the climate change. The climate change is not stopping.
There were very low temperatures in parts of the United States and Canada last year. But Mr. Giraud says that does not mean the Earth is not getting warmer. He says many other areas had higher temperatures than normal. The WMO climate report provides details of ice cover, ocean warming, rising sea levels, and gases linked to climate change. It says these events are all linked and show that our world is changing. The report says many parts of the Asian continent received more rain than usual in 2013. And it says Britain received more rain than at any time in the past 250 years. The report says there was little rainfall in the American state of California, in the Sahel area of Africa, and in parts of southern Africa. And it notes extremely dry weather was linked to record high temperatures in Australia. Michel Giraud says weather events such as more intense heat and heavier rainfall or snow are what one would expect as a result of human-produced climate change. He also is concerned about the condition of Arctic ice.
What is worrying is that an increasing fraction of this ice is actually recent, new ice. This ice is normally very thin, and therefore it's more vulnerable to the variability and to the change in the climate. So this is the fact that the ice surface is a little bit more than the previous year is actually not in contradiction with the global warming. Actually, the volume continues to decrease.
He also says there is a strong possibility of an El Niño developing near the end of this year. El Niño is a complex weather interaction between the atmosphere and the ocean. Mr. Giraud says if that happens, the world can expect higher than normal temperatures in 2015. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Thanks, Chris. By the way, here is a towel to mop that extra perspiration off your forehead. It's time for us to go cool off as we await more Learning English programs. And don't forget, world news follows at the beginning of the hour on VOA. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. The international community is warning of a possible famine in South Sudan if the fighting there does not end. Leaders of East African countries met recently in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. They discussed ways to stop the fighting in the world's newest nation. South Sudan's government and rebel forces agreed in January to end the fighting. But it has not stopped. There has been little progress in peace talks, which are also being held in Addis Ababa. U.S. Special Diplomat Donald Booth spoke during the meeting of the East African Intergovernmental Authority on Development. Members of IGAD are leading the peace talks. Mr. Booth said he is deeply unhappy that neither group is respecting the ceasefire.
This failure has led to thousands of additional deaths and an ever-worsening humanitarian situation, with South Sudan facing a possible famine.
The rainy season will come to South Sudan in just a few weeks. But many fields remain unplanted because people have fled their homes. They are afraid of attack if they return. It is estimated that 85% of families in South Sudan are farmers who depend on animals and agriculture to live. Alexander Rondos is the European Union's special diplomat to the Horn of Africa. He said officials must act quickly or there will be a famine in South Sudan.
If people cannot go and plant, there will not be sufficient stocks within months. Livestock, a large proportion of the livestock population of a country populated by so many people who have a pastoralist economy, is lost. It is absolutely essential that all the necessary steps be made.
Government soldiers loyal to President Salva Kiir and those who support his former vice president, Riek Machar, began fighting in December. Tens of thousands of people have been killed. The United Nations says more than 700,000 people have been displaced. The UN says more than 200,000 of them have fled to neighboring countries, including Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, and Sudan. IGAD leaders may send African troops to South Sudan by the middle of next month. The troops would come from Ethiopia, Kenya, Burundi, and Rwanda. IGAD has also asked for support from the African Union and the UN. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. For more Learning English materials, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver. Thank you.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today, we will tell about malaria and efforts to defeat it. Scientists say progress in medical research could reduce the number and severity of malaria cases worldwide. The World Health Organization reported recently that there has been great progress in the fight against the disease.
Many countries are organizing activities in honor of World Malaria Day this Monday, April 7th. The events will call attention to malaria and international efforts against it. The World Health Organization reports there were about 207 million cases of the disease and an estimated 627,000 malaria deaths in 2012. Most deaths were among children living in Africa. The WHO says a child there dies every minute from the disease. Most cases of malaria are in African countries south of one of the world's biggest deserts, the Sahara. Malaria is also a health threat to people living in parts of Asia, Central and South America, the Middle East, and Southeastern Europe. People from malaria-free countries who visit areas with high rates of malaria are also very much at risk. This is because their bodies have little or no resistance to the disease.
The cause of malaria is a parasite called Plasmodium. Mosquitoes infected with Plasmodium spread the disease to human beings through mosquito bites. The parasites reproduce in the human liver and then infect red blood cells. After they enter the blood cells, they reproduce again. As they do this, they destroy the cells. Signs of the disease appear in victims 10 to 15 days after they are bitten. People with malaria develop a high body temperature. They also can become weak, violently expel material from the stomach, and suffer pain in the head or muscles. If not treated, malaria can make the victim sick and even cause death.
A parasite called Plasmodium falciparum is responsible for most malaria infections. But experts say a lesser-known form of the disease could become a more serious threat in the future. They are seeing an increase in infections from the Plasmodium vivax parasite. An estimated 2.5 billion people live in areas where Plasmodium vivax is common. Until recently, experts believed 95% of the at-risk population in some areas was protected from vivax infection. This was because they lack a protein in their red blood cells called a Duffy protein. Without it, vivax parasites cannot enter the blood cells. But researchers have found that in Madagascar, people without the Duffy protein may be carrying the vivax parasite. They say it appears the parasite may be changing so it can fight off natural resistance and infect blood cells that lack the Duffy protein.
Researchers remain concerned about the rising number of vivax malaria cases. But the worldwide effort against malaria appears to be succeeding. The World Health Organization recently reported that millions of lives have been saved since 2000 with better prevention and better medicines. And health officials expect even more success as governments and private groups target African countries like Kenya. The WHO's latest report on malaria says 3 million people, most of them children, have been saved. And it says the death rate has been cut almost in half. Dr. Robert Newman heads the organization's Global Malaria Program.
There's been a large increase over the last 12 years in financing for malaria control efforts, and that has purchased life-saving commodities like long-lasting insecticide-treated bed nets, insecticides for indoor residual spraying, diagnostic tests, especially rapid diagnostic tests, and antimalarial medicines.
Malaria is a serious problem in more than 100 countries. Dr. Newman expects the number of deaths from malaria to drop even more over the next 10 years.
I do think that we're going to see an incredible decade of success ahead, especially as people realize that this is a proven public health investment, that there's a tremendous return on the investments that are made to date, and that we have millions more lives that can be saved over the next 10 years.
He predicts a vaccine will be ready within 20 years that will reduce the number of cases by 75%.
Experts say without malaria, productivity will increase. People will be better able to provide food for their families, and they can spend the money they would use on anti-malarial drugs on other things. Countries can give increased attention to other health needs. Dr. Joy Fumafi works with the African Leaders Malaria Alliance.
Once you don't have children's wards in hospitals dominated by malaria, children who are suffering from malaria, like you currently have in a lot of these malaria endemic countries, you are going to free up a lot of resources that are going to combat the other diseases that are challenging our communities.
Issues in the fight against malaria include a growing resistance to anti-malarial drugs and insecticide products. But Dr. Newman says there is an even bigger threat.
The most serious threat to the future of malaria control and ultimate elimination is actually a financial one.
The main effort to control malaria involves treatment of bed nets and indoor living areas with insecticides, products used to kill insects. The WHO says insecticide use has greatly reduced the number of malaria cases. It says insecticide-treated bed nets have been shown to reduce the number of malaria cases by 50% and the infection rate by 90%.
Here's a tale without an ending, about a princess that needs defending.
Recently, the Against Malaria Foundation worked with a group of students to create a short video about the dangers of malaria. Film star Susan Sarandon became interested in their work. She volunteered to serve as the announcer for the video project.
The evil king, malaria fed. His parasites then began to spread through the cells and to the liver. Her blood becomes a deadly river.
In the video, a little girl is seen falling asleep. You would think she might have a peaceful dream of a child. But instead, a large mosquito attacks the girl, and she becomes infected with malaria.
This nightmare is a worldwide threat, yet the simplest thing can stop it, a net. It's such a small thing to buy, so millions like the princess will not die.
That was the actress Susan Sarandon in Nightmare, a short animated video warning about the dangers of malaria.
The UN Children's Fund and other organizations supply bed nets to affected areas. Agencies that offer help to prevent and treat malaria say they have only half the money they need. Without financial help, the groups warn, gains will be stopped.
Early identification and drug treatment can reduce the severity of malaria and prevent death. The anti-malarial drug chloroquine was widely used until recent years when the malaria parasite became resistant to the drug. Now the WHO advises use of artisanal-based combination treatments, or ACTs, for malaria patients. The WHO says the international community is now in a position to defeat malaria. It says that with the use of insecticides, better testing, and drug treatments, the world could reach its goal of zero malaria deaths by 2015. Still, it says there is an immediate need for the international community to continue and increase its investment in the fight against malaria.
Researchers have developed what they are calling the first non-invasive method of identifying a malaria infection in the human body. They are now using a laser beam scanner to test for the disease without opening up the body. The test is painless, does not require blood from a person, and appears to be right every time it is done. Currently, medical workers study a blood sample under a microscope for evidence of the deadly parasite. The test requires a trained technician, costly equipment, and time, things that are not always available in poorer countries.
The new device only requires a person to place a finger on a laser device. Dr. Dmitry Lopatko is a researcher at Rice University in Houston, Texas.
We shine a very short light pulse through the skin, and this light pulse is absorbed only by malaria parasites because of the wavelength we use. And in response to this short light pulse, a parasite literally explodes.
The light comes from a low-powered laser. The device has less power than a laser pointer. It shines on a very small particle called hemozoan. The malaria parasite produces the particle after it has infected red blood cells. Hemozoan crystals are not found in normal red blood cells. As the laser heats the crystals, they create small bubbles inside infected cells. Dr. Lopatko says the bubbles explode and then make a sound that scientists can hear and count.
You can detect just few infected cells per million normal cells.
Dr. Lopatko says when researchers tested the device, it was never wrong, and it was able to find malaria infection early, when treatment is very important.
The device can be carried and depends on battery power. It costs about $10,000 to $20,000 to manufacture. But Dr. Lopatko says that is not a lot of money if one considers the number of people it can test.
Each device will be capable to screen more than 200,000 people per year, so the cost of analysis for each patient will be less than 50 cents.
People without medical training can use the device to discover whether people are infected with malaria. Dr. Lopatko says the light beam has shown to be safe in volunteers. Researchers will now test the device at a Houston hospital that cares for patients infected with malaria. If those tests are successful, researchers will test the device throughout the world this year. A report describing the malaria detection device was published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
This Science in the News was written and produced by Christopher Cruz, from reports by Carol Pearson and Jessica Berman in Washington. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science on the Voice of America.